Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlotnik. Today, it is my distinct pleasure and a privilege to welcome back Jason Hartman, my very good friend, and a master blaster of turnkey investments out there. He sells, 1,000 turkeys a year. He's one of the best people out there.
Not that many. I wish.
But a lot.
Yeah.
How are you, Jason?
Good, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast for the second time.
Pleasure is all mine. So the market is changing, and I think it's exciting, actually. I'm actually excited about this change. I hope I don't regret it, but I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the market cool down a bit.
Yes, the market is certainly changing. It's showing a lot of volatility, and I don't know what's changed. We seem to be kind of moving along just totally fine through the summer, and suddenly the fall volatility has happened, and it looks like Fed increased rates in September, and that triggered things. Do you think that was the major point?
Oh, well, this Fed, I think, is the most transparent Fed of my adult lifetime, that's for sure. And they have made it very clear that they are going to keep raising rates until things cool off a bit. And is commenting on how he thinks the Fed has gone loco. And, he doesn't want to see them spoil his party because the Trump economy is absolutely booming. It's really a miracle what's going on right now. We see the lowest unemployment rate in, 49 years. We see the first time Americans, especially blue-collar Americans, have had a real dollar inflation-adjusted wage increase in 41 years. GDP is setting records. I mean, boom times are here. No question about it. So the Fed has got to cool it off a little bit because they worry about inflation coming, and I think that worry is very well founded. That's what they're doing, and they've made no bones about it. That is what they are doing. They are going to cool things off.
I very much appreciate your opinion here. On some things, I sort of agree. On some things, I beg to differ.
So, well, tell me what you differ on. I'm really curious.
So I differ on the fact that, I guess it was mostly previous Fed. The current Fed chairman is fairly new. Let's just call it the Fed in general, has kept interest rates at zero for too long. Since the crisis, essentially from late 2008 until 2016, with small exceptions, Fed has kept the rates at zero. And that's been
artificially low.
Yeah, so my point is this: by not starting to raise rates earlier, they let the employment get out of control in a good sense. They let the rates, the very low rates, stimulated the economy, and the unemployment is historically lowest since, I guess, the man went on the moon. So that is partially a problem. I recently was listening to CNBC, and the commentator said that the Fed, if they don't raise rates fast, it'll be criminal. So they must increase rates as fast as they can possibly do to sort of reflect the fact that we have very full employment. And if they don't raise rates, you're right, the inflation can accelerate. So, but my point where I disagree is the fact that inflation is out of control. I think we have some level of inflation now, but there is no CPI numbers showing significant inflation. Maybe they're fearing inflation. Maybe they're trying to prevent inflation, but it's not there. And I'm not saying the rates shouldn't go up. I'm saying the rates should not go up fast. Velocity of rate increases could cause major crisis in a leveraged economy used to very low interest rates. That's all I'm saying.
Right, right. Well, that's why they want to do it slowly and incrementally. And hopefully they won't get too out of control, because the problem you have here is that this is central. I mean, the Fed is an example of classic central planning. And central planning, as you well know, does not work. It's a terrible idea. Really,
socialistic structure. It doesn't work.
Yeah, of course it doesn't work. But that's what we have. That's the world we live in. So we've got to just react to it, right? Like everybody else. But the feedback mechanism, it has a delay built in. So they do something today, and then they see the feedback take place over 1 month, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. And by the time the feedback is priced into the market, then they've got to do something else and react again, because maybe they overreacted or maybe they underreacted. And so you never know. It's just a big guessing game. They just don't know. And the feedback is very slow for it to play out. But, you know, at least we've got this new tax law that, you know, the Republican or the Trump tax law, call it whatever you want. But that is a phenomenal boost to the economy. I mean, I know in my own company, and just in my real estate company alone, one of the companies I have been trying to spend the tax dollars I'm going to save. and that's exactly what they wanted to do. It's classic trickle-down economics. We've been hiring people like crazy. In the past maybe 2 months or so, we've hired 41 people. 41 people. Now, these are contractors and freelancers, but 41. And so we are spreading more money out throughout the economy. And that's a win-win for everybody, right? You know, the economy wins, tax revenues in aggregate ultimately will increase. I mean, you can't dispute the fact, and it really is true, that the economic activity increases, or tax revenue increases, when a tax scheme increases economic activity. And that's exactly what this plan does. It's what the 1986 Reagan plan did.
Reaganomics, classic Reaganomics.
Yeah, you know, it's the Laffer curve and all the rest. And it works. It's simply true. Now, there are circumstances that take place at various points in history that may make it distort that, of course. I mean, Bill Clinton, as a president, was very fortunate that he presided over the era of the fax machine and the internet, which increased the velocity of money. And really, nobody talks about that except me, it seems like. But he was the beneficiary of that. And he was also smart enough, although I'm not a Clinton fan, but he was smart enough to not interfere too much with the economy. And you know, to his credit, that was not bad. I mean, for a Democrat.
Well, I appreciate you sharing the history, and I agree with you. I you know, having been an immigrant from the former Soviet Union, I can tell you that the government policies, planned economy fails, and fails miserably. So I will agree with you. I very much believe in Reaganomics, and people are best spenders of their own money. And in your case, it's a good example that you're hiring people and you're helping the economy. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, well, hey, my pleasure. Listen, I thought, what am I going to do with this extra money we're saving in taxes? We better go spend it, right? And expand the company, expand the business, expand the market. So it's everybody wins when that happens.
Including
the government, interestingly, including the government.
Yeah, I mean, that's the intent. That's the intent of the tax cuts. And that's why GDP is running well above the projected numbers now. But let me take a step back. I'm going back to the interest rate increases. And I had a conversation earlier even today with a gentleman that has a significant real estate portfolio. And I have conversations with other folks. And there's a significant degree of concern that there are plenty of real estate business, I guess real estate projects, real estate investments that have variable rate mortgages or adjustable rate mortgages, and they're tied up to interest rate increases. And when these Fed increases take place, they significantly impact all sectors of the economy tied to the index. So this is true for variable rate mortgages. It's true for corporate lines of credit. It's true for anything that is tied to an index, including even CPI-adjusted bonds. So in this particular case, the rapid increases, and I think three increases projected for next year is too fast.
They're even talking about five increases next year.
That's the problem. That's the reason they did that for so many years, and now they're going crazy to catch up. That's right. What I'm saying. That will most definitely slow down inflation. It will cause all kinds of issues with debt. The debt that is tied to low interest rates, when it rolls over and refinances, the cost of capital goes up significantly. And last night I was at a business dinner. I was talking with the large portfolio holder of office properties. And he mentioned they are building up cash reserves like they won't believe it. They're very, very cautious about the situation. They're stashing every dollar of cash in case they have to deal with refinancing situations when these mortgages mature. What's interesting is in the office space and commercial real estate, the leases that are written out, they're multiple year leases, these are contracts. And the increases may not keep up with the raising interest rate.
Well, yeah, they typically have CPI or consumer price index increases. But the CPI, as anybody with a brain knows, is understated. You know, the government has a big incentive to understate or lie about the inflation rate. And they do this through three major methods: weighting, substitution, and hedonics. So they basically say, you know, with weighting, they decide which things in that basket of goods that make up the CPI, which things will have more weight. Like, do we put more weight on housing or this or that or the other thing, right?
Right.
They'll do it through substitution. They'll say, well, you know, if the price of beef goes up, everybody will just switch to chicken, right? They substitute. And, you know, maybe you don't like chicken. Maybe you think chicken's a dirty bird and you'd rather eat beef. So that's substitution. And then hedonics is, derived from the word hedonism, right? And hedonism is about seeking pleasure, right? How much pleasure do you get out of something? So, for example, these computers we're both looking at, Mike, as we're talking on this meeting, it seems like every time I buy a new laptop, it costs me right around $2,800 every time. And so there might be a 2-year cycle. I buy one every 2 years or so. And it's always $2,800. It's always the same price, but each computer gets better than the prior one, right? It gets faster.
A lot.
Storage space. Yeah, it's great. Technology, you know, Moore's law, right? The power of the processor will double every 18 months, right?
So
the hedonic adjustment says that even though I paid $2,800, if this computer is 50% better than the last, then the index only counts it as $1,400, right? Only half.
As if you bought the same computer as you bought last year now for half price.
But the reality is I didn't buy it for half price. I paid $2,800. I paid the same price. Now, granted, you could adjust for, 3 or 4% inflation if you want to follow the CPI. But the hedonic indexing is logical on its face, but it's also a scam. The reason it's a scam, Mike, is because it says we as people aren't entitled to progress. In other words, the benefit of progress does not show up in the consumer price index. That's absurd, right? Imagine if we hedonically adjusted everything since the invention of the wheel or the light bulb. Everything, it would look like everything costs nothing, but it really does cost something, okay?
Yeah, Jason, I agree with you 100% on this subject, and it goes back to the grand conspiracy theory. You've heard me speak about this. The grand conspiracy theory is the government is simply... is going to go bankrupt if they keep CPI artificially low.
Right.
If they don't keep it artificially low, they're going to go bankrupt. So they keep it artificially low, and thank you for sharing.
The government has a built-in incentive, Mike, as you know, to inflate. It's in their best interest to inflate. Always. It's a great business plan. I wish I could do it the way they do it. I mean, it's an awesome deal. If you control the currency, the global reserve currency, and you can borrow or buy things and then pay them back in ever cheaper dollars, what a deal. That's the best deal on earth. Nothing beats that.
I like your terminology, inflation-induced debt destruction.
But yes.
That's the fancy terms around which you just said.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Inflation-induced debt destruction, it just means you borrow money today, you get the full value of it today, and you pay it back in ever cheaper dollars.
Yeah.
It's the best deal in the world.
It is the best deal in the world. So the government is trying to cause inflation to a degree, but that's what I'm saying today. That's why I am saying the Fed is making a humongous mistake raising the rates so fast today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because inflation will be good. Inflation will be good for the economy for the reasons that we mentioned. It will actually devalue the debt. So by raising interest rates, the short-term interest increases is highly deflationary. They're slowing down inflation big time. And what they're going to do is they're going to cause ripples in the economy.
Sure.
Stock market, the last number of weeks have had a very nervous time. Today it seems to be recovering, but it's been on a downturn. And those folks who are looking to buy, I would say, be very careful. I'm not giving stock advice. I'm just saying we may not be done with the correction. We haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, I would agree with that one.
Yeah. So the I've heard even that the PEs, I'm not sure if you follow Robert Shiller. He is the,
Shiller is, he misleads people. If you read his, at least the second Irrational Exuberance book, it's just totally misleading. I was really annoyed with him after reading that. The Case-Shiller index is also very misleading because the primary one, now they did create a new index that, profiles more markets, but the original most commonly cited Case-Shiller index that everyone uses for housing prices only includes 20 markets. In the US, you have almost 400 markets. This is a scam. It's another giant scam. Now, here's the thing, Mike. As we've talked about before, there are three types of markets in the world, okay, and in the US, of course. Linear, cyclical, and hybrid markets, right? And the Case-Shiller index that of those 20 markets, guess what? 75% of those markets are cyclical markets. They're the markets that go like this, up and down, up and down, up and down, versus the linear sort of slow and steady eddy markets.
Right.
And so only 25% of that index, talk about weighting, includes linear markets. It's so misleading. It's mind-boggling.
It is a biased index. I agree with you. Yeah. It is a biased index towards the cyclical markings. But I brought Robert Shiller for his cyclically adjusted price-to-earning ratio. I'm not sure if you've heard about that.
Yeah, in referring to the stock market there, right?
Exactly, only to the stock market.
Right? Okay.
He has a very interesting data he's kept for years. It's called cyclically adjusted price-to-earning ratio.
Tell us about it.
And what he pointed out in a recent publication, which was about the middle of September, that the cyclically adjusted PEs are now at the level pre-Great Depression of late 20s. So we are approaching a point where the PEs are so out of whack that the crash.
And when you say PEs, you're talking about price to earnings ratios.
Price to earning ratios in the stock market. So it's the reason it's cyclically adjusted is because we're not in the same, the cycles, economic cycles change. So the whole point is that the earnings are going to slow down quite a bit. The rising interest rates will be like gravity on earnings. It will slow down corporate earnings. Because of the debt service on the corporate debt, lines of credit, revolving debt is going to go up quite a bit. And there's a significant increase. If you think about it for a minute, let's just say corporate bonds trade 2 years ago or 3 years ago at 4%. The rates go up 200 basis points. Now the same bonds trade at 6%. It's a 50% increase on the debt service. It's not 2%, it's 50%. The impact of these rate increases is magnified quite a bit. And that's what I'm saying, that the rapid growth, rapid acceleration of interest rates, the velocity of increase can cause corporate earnings to suffer significantly and faster than people realize, number one. Number two, real estate. Projects with situations where there's adjustable rate mortgages, rolling mortgages, and inflation doesn't have enough time to catch up. We talked about this. I agree with your primary point, and I'll let you speak about this in a second, that rising interest rates typically means higher rents. And that's a very important correlation. In general, it does, but it takes time to catch up. When they raise the rates too fast, too much, rents cannot keep up with the increases. And the consequence is a significant squeeze on the debt service coverage ratio and general cash flow. What do you think about that?
Well, on the company side, on the stock market side, I think that those ideas are generally true. But the problem is that they don't adjust for technology and the fact that these companies are just every day becoming so much more efficient, and the per employee income in a company it has become so much higher.
Productivity growth. We're talking about productivity growth, effectively.
Yeah, productivity growth and as Peter Thiel, I think it was Peter Thiel that said, software is eating the world, okay? And the efficiency gains are truly mind-boggling, you know? And we haven't even touched really on AI yet and a zillion other great technologies, 3D printing. I mean, this stuff is still in its infancy. Who knows what the world of blockchain and cryptocurrencies will bring, probably even whole new realms of efficiency we can't even imagine nowadays. In the old fashioned paradigm, yeah, he's right. But I think there's more to it than that, like everything.
But by the way, talking about technology in our lives and productivity growth, pretty important point. So we've seen full employment, and for years we've seen no wage inflation or limited wage inflation. And the reason for this has been because of the productivity. Productivity advances have taken the place of wage inflation. So in theory, we should be seeing some more of wage inflation.
Well,
now.
It wasn't just automation that. Okay, these globalists have just been hollowing out the country. And now that tide has turned. And so, you know what drives me absolutely nuts, Mike? They're always blaming Trump. And listen, I don't even like Trump very much, okay? All I said is he's going to be good for the economy. Well, hey, I was right about that. But they just talk about the negative side. They say, oh, well, you know, prices are going to go up, blah, blah, blah. They never mention that all these jobs are coming back and all the jobs that exist are you know, seeing wage increases. I mean, that's, you know, you simply can't have, and I'm a libertarian at heart, but you simply cannot have open free trade when you don't have equally yoked vendors, meaning that the folks in China can pollute like crazy. They don't have minimum wage laws like we do. They don't, you know, their employers don't get sued for bogus sexual harassment claims or unlawful termination. They don't have to have OSHA overlooking everything every day and live in fear of litigation or government regulation. Okay, it's not equally yoked between the U.S. and China or the U.S. and Mexico or the U.S. and anybody. Okay, so you just can't have an open trade scenario when you don't have the parties equally yoked. Now, that concept of equally yoked is an old biblical concept referring to marriage, how the two people in a marriage need to be equally yoked, right? Like an ox, okay? They need to have equal weight of obligations on them. And the trading partners are not equally yoked.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. And let's chat a little bit about the trade for a minute. I don't want to make it too long. We're sort of a little bit running out of time. But it's pretty interesting what's happening with the trade. I mean, part of the stock market reaction is concern to the trade wars. I happen to agree with the position that the trade with China and many other countries for years has not been balanced or equally yoked, in your words. And Trump sort of disrupted it. He's sort of a very significant disruptor of an old balance that was not balanced in our favor. And I understand the purpose of that exercise is to create a little bit more fair economic conditions for the U.S. companies on the global scale. From that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. But that itself is disruptive to the economy. From the point of view, U.S. consumer is very much dependent on cheap imported goods from China. And they're used to a lot of things being cheap just because they're being produced by a slave labor-like environment.
Right. Yeah.
It is not a fair economic condition, but we've been accustomed to this. And now it's changing, which will cause commodity inflation, just general price inflation. And, right. and if the income inflation doesn't keep up, we're going to have some level of stagflation.
Well, let me tell you something. Okay, just take this very simple you know, people call me an economist. I guess I'm an economist. I don't know. Maybe I'm a hack economist. How's that? Well, just take this very simple
concept. You're a very good economist without a PhD in economics.
That's yeah, without a PhD. Thankfully, I don't have a PhD because I'd probably not make any sense if I did. Okay, so so take this very simple example. Look, if you are an American worker, you have to spend more money to buy consumer goods, and you probably have way too much junk in your house anyway. So you don't need to buy all this stuff. And I buy a lot of stuff too. Okay, I'll be the first to admit. But I'm just saying, do we really need all this stuff? Like, if you look at the amount of stuff we have versus the amount of stuff people had in the old days, we just have too much stuff, okay, honestly. But notwithstanding my editorial on stuff, okay? You know, you're going to spend a certain amount of money on goods at the store, right? Or wherever you buy. But you're not going to spend, hopefully, all of your money. So the idea is, if you have an increase in your income, ideally you don't spend all of your income, then that margin that's left over, that 20% you keep every year, hopefully, is an increase in wealth. And that leads to capital formation. And you can't create wealth in a society without capital formation. Capital formation is key. You know, nobody can invest or build or create future productivity without capital formation. So you've got to have that. And this kind of leveling the trading playing field allows people to create capital formation. It's a good thing.
Yeah. I totally understand and I agree with you. We do need more capital formation, and obviously tax cuts and macroeconomics help that quite a bit. The private sector makes the investments. On the consumer, one comment I'll make is that it's a terrible word for citizen. So
What did you say? I missed what you said there. What did you say?
I said we call citizens consumers. And as you rightfully pointed out, we consume too much. We have too much junk.
Yeah.
But U.S. Corporations have trained the U.S. citizens.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Consumers. Yeah, I know.
It's been brainwashing to buy stuff.
We've all been brainwashed, including myself. I know. Yeah. So,
anyway, it's a great discussion. I appreciate your coming on the podcast. I think we're running a little bit out of time. Any kind of parting thoughts? You've been brilliant. Again, I consider you PhD in economics without the PhD.
I saved a lot of money on student loan debt by not getting a real PhD. I'm an economist that actually has some money left over.
That was very wise. Very wise, for sure.
Well, it wasn't planned. It just worked out that way. So anyway, I would just say, obviously be careful. Look, the cycle is changing. Mike, you led with that, and you are right. And there's no question, things, they are changing, as Bob Dylan says. Times, they are changing. And this can't go on forever. It probably can go on for a couple more years. We'll see. Nobody really knows. And if you think you know and you think you can predict the cycle, you're crazy, because the Fed can't predict the cycle and they control the cycle. They can't even predict it. Okay.
I was able to do that.
Yeah.
Until my crystal ball broke, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah. Until your crystal ball broke. Absolutely. So just buy conservative, yield producing, in other words, cash flow producing investments like the ones my company sells. You know, we help people buy properties and build portfolios in linear markets, conservative, good quality, single family homes, mostly some apartment buildings and such, in linear markets around the U.S. My website is jasonhartman.com. Of course, my podcast is available, a very popular podcast. Mike, you've been on the show a couple of times. It's called The Creating Wealth Show. You can type my name, Jason Hartman, and anywhere you get a podcast and you can find it. And I just want to wish you and your listeners happy investing.
Thank you, Jason, very much. It's jasonhartman.com, Creating Wealth Show. And Jason is a brilliant PhD without the PhD. And I appreciate you coming on the Big Mike Fund podcast and sharing your wisdom. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Happy investing.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.